Hi, this is Smriti Kirbanandan, your host for Health Forward Podcast. One of the most important things you can do for yourself is to take care of your health. Your road to discovering an all-inclusive, empathetic, and innovative healthcare ecosystem starts right now. Data is king. Integration, interoperability, integrity are critical as they allow us to make the right decision at the right time. They empower transparency, trust, and most importantly, helps reporting to public health, improving positive health outcomes. In this episode, I speak with Mickey Tripathi, who serves as a National Coordinator for Health IT at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, where he leads the formulation of the Federal Health IT Strategy and coordinates Federal Health IT policies, standards, programs, and investments. Mickey, welcome to Health Forward. Such a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks so much. Really delighted to be here.
We'll deep dive right in. Mickey, what has inspired you to be in the field of healthcare?
Well, I guess a few things. One, I come from a medical family. Both my parents are physicians and my grandfather on my mother's side was a physician. So it was a strong push to for myself to become a physician. For anyone who is a South Asian background of immigrants, you know what that pressure is like. But I ended up not becoming a physician, obviously becoming a part of the healthcare field. Aside from the, you know, from the familial push, the other thing I think that has always been of interest to me is the intersection of science and technology and policy and business. So I, you know, started off my career working in defense, which had a lot of those elements of bringing together technology and science and policy, and then ended up gravitating toward healthcare, which has a lot of those same aspects.
Wonderful. I think we do share the same experience on the pressure. So which part of India are you from, Mickey?
Oh, well, I was born here. My parents are from UP, a city called Lucknow.
Oh, nice. Very nice. I haven't visited, but I'm quite familiar with UP. Mickey, technology seems to drive us closer and far apart as well. With this duality, you speak about phygital, which is the physical and digital design. Share with us a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I think we live in a world right now where we've, you know, spent a lot of time and effort in the US, I'm speaking of, investing in electronic health records. And that's, you know, over the last 10 years, a tremendous amount has been accomplished to the point where we've, you know, kind of flipped the equation of adoption, where in, you know, roughly 2010, 2011, we started where, you know, something like 5 to 10% of providers across the country had electronic health records, to the point now where it's almost exactly the opposite. 97% of hospitals and 90% of ambulatory providers have electronic health records, not just electronic health records, certified electronic health records, certified by ONC. So that's an incredible change, but one of the interesting technology transitions or socio-technology transitions that we're undergoing now, which has, you know, really been a part of, I think, almost any technology transition, regardless of industry, is that the technology has outpaced the changes that are required in process, in culture, and in mindset. So we're sort of in this, you know, in-between world right now where we've had, you know, relatively rapid adoption of electronic health records, but it's still sort of being bolted on to workflows and business processes and fundamental economics that are rooted in paper, bricks, and mortar. So I think we're, you know, we're slowly starting to make that change. But I think that's, you know, one of the things that I'm really excited about being in this position right now is to try to catalyze the opportunity here to start to say, how do we, if we really started to think about healthcare as being truly digitally native, we would probably rethink a whole bunch of the ways that we do things today rather than trying to, you know, sort of force technology onto processes that were basically conceived in paper, bricks, and mortar. So I think that's what I, you know, think of when I think of the physical and the digital and trying to rapidly move us toward a world where we think about, you know, workflows that are designed with a digital foundation in mind.
I love that answer also because it really asks us to think about empathy and really thinking about the patient experience. So thank you for all you do. Data is king, as you know, Mickey. It allows us to make the right decisions at the right time. What is your advice to healthcare systems on being ready for the great data integration and interoperability?
Yeah, data is king, queen, and jester, I guess, at times too. That's part of the challenge. So, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, we are rapidly, you know, in that move, you know, to becoming, you know, sort of digitally based. You know, we've, you know, coming from a world where we had, you know, we live in a very hybrid world, first off. So we've got paper-based things and digital things. Increasingly, that is becoming, you know, more and more completely digital. But even in that digital space, we, you know, if you go into a hospital system, for example, today, you'll find that it's not as if it's one digital pool of data. It's a big amount of medical record data in an enterprise EHR, like an Epic or a Cerner or Meditech or Allscripts or whatever you have. And then all these little pots of data, of digital data that live in all these other systems. And they're, you know, sort of held together in some ways with, you know, with bailing wire and have very limited ways of bringing that data together. So I think, you know, one fundamental transition, I think, that a lot of organizations are going through, it just takes time, is to, you know, try to think about how all that data is going to be aggregated. How do you have, you know, sort of a model that brings all that data together, administrative as well as clinical, and starts to, you know, think about that as, you know, an entire resource to be able to draw from and derive value from for the organization as well as, and, you know, mostly for the patient, obviously. The other, you know, critically important piece of that, which I think is often underestimated in terms of the amount of work it takes and the importance of it, is data governance. Mm-hmm. So having a formalized governance process to decide how data is going to be brought together and who is going to have access to it and under what terms and for what purposes, so that you create that kind of transparency and that, you know, which is really important for the stakeholders who are involved in, you know, creating that data. Then also you create the end-to-end visibility, which is incredibly important in this day and age where we've got, you know, concerns about privacy, concerns about security, and wanting to be able to have a handle on where is all of my data and what's happening to it.
Yeah, I really like that what you're really asking and displaying is transparency, inclusiveness, and requesting all the stakeholders to have a seat at the table to really make this happen. And I just truly enjoy that because we need a little more integrated system than a fragmented system in healthcare.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, the other piece, I guess, that I would just mention is when thinking about the strategy, thinking about the mobilization of that data and what it is you want to be able to mobilize it for. You know, I think that there is probably a naive, and I've certainly done it myself, so that's not a criticism, a naive tendency to think, let's just take all of the data and, you know, and apply sort of equal effort to trying to bring, you know, all of those various pots of data together and to spend, you know, equal amounts of time on curating the data, normalizing the data, you know, putting it into environments that are response ready, when the reality is that there are different layers of importance and priority, urgency and importance of the different types of data, and having a clear focus of what type of data do you need to mobilize for what purposes and with what parameters in terms of time, frequency, access, all of those things can allow, you know, sort of the creation of a sophisticated infrastructure that is responsive in the ways that it needs to be responsive and that isn't overinvesting for responsiveness that isn't needed for other types of data.
Love that answer. Intentional actions are important is what Mickey is trying to say. Yep. We're definitely making progress from HL7 versions to FHIR to make data exchange smoother and efficient. What are some of the hopes and challenges you're witnessing during this transformation?
Just one point of clarification. I mean, FHIR is an HL7 standard as well. We all think of the HL7 V2, HL7 V3 as HL7, and then we call FHIR. but it's actually all HL7, you know, sort of being a past board member of HL7, I feel an obligation to make that point. So it is, you know, HL7 V2, HL7 V3, and HL7 FHIR. And HL7 CCDA. So it really is just maturing through a different set of standards that have been designed over time, but that have also been designed with specific and sometimes different purposes in mind as well, but all under the HL7 Standards Development Organization umbrella. But what we are hoping to accomplish is the transition, as appropriate, to greater and greater use of more modern internet conventions for the sharing of information, or, you know, more broadly, the access exchange and use of information. And as we've seen in almost every other healthcare vertical, almost every other vertical and in every other part of the internet economy, you know, modern, lightweight, RESTful API-based exchange using OAuth2 for propagation of authorization in very lightweight ways and in very secure ways has, you know, served us incredibly well in almost every other part of the internet economy. And we want to be able to bring that kind of capability to healthcare as well. So the convenience and the robustness and the reliability that we have in using our Uber app to order food and have it delivered to our house ought to be the same type of capability that we have in ordering a lab or just having access to my information, or for a specialist to be able to have access to information from a PCP. So that's, you know, at a high level is, you know, what we want to be able to do is say all of that is just about being able to get better performance through modern technologies in healthcare. I think that brings with it a number of other opportunities that are in some ways second order, but are hugely important. So one of them is that, you know, basing more of our interoperability and our standards on the conventions that are used outside of healthcare means that we get more developers coming from outside of healthcare into healthcare itself. I mean, prior to the adoption of FHIR in healthcare, we saw very little migration of, you know, people from outside of healthcare coming into healthcare because they looked at the standards that we were using that were developed, you know, vintage 1980s, and we're just like, I'm not going to do that. there's no new MIT or Stanford grad or University of Illinois Urbana, you know, not to just point to particular schools, who I can convince to, you know, pick up that 1,000-page implementation guide based on old XML, you know, standards and SOAP exchange, and convince them that they ought to, you know, come into healthcare to do that. But, you know, what we've seen, you know, certainly with the rapid adoption of FHIR is we've seen lots of other players jump in from other parts of the economy because they sort of look at the RESTful API approach of FHIR and they recognize it immediately as, you know, that's the way every other API works. So now I'm, you know, happy to jump in and start to think about developing against that. So I think that's one incredibly important benefit that we're already starting to see. The other is that, you know, FHIR is the foundation for richer types of patterns of exchange that the older types of approaches just don't support. So when you start to think about not only the ability of just being able to query for information at a data level, so just getting the information that you want and only the information you want, where right now, you know, query-based exchange is for clinical documents. So you're getting the whole continuity of care document, for example, with has all of the, you know, 32, 33 data fields. And, you know, even though all you wanted was the allergies, that's it. You just wanted the allergies, but you're, you know, required to consume the whole clinical document, which has privacy implications. It's very inefficient. It's got all sorts of negative aspects to it. But there's not only that, but the ability to build richer types of functionalities on top of a FHIR foundation to be able to do things that are very normal in, you know, again, in every other walk of life that we have. So be able to do dynamic scheduling, for example. Why can't I just use an API to schedule a, you know, an appointment with my doctor in the same way that I'm able to do airline scheduling, for example, that Kayak and Expedia do? Why can't I have the ability to have software hooks so that I'm able to have clinical decision support and advice and guidance delivered back to me as I just go through my workflow of my electronic health record? Why can't I subscribe to a patient to be able to get information pushed to me whenever a change happens in that patient's record, rather than always wondering, is there more information out there? Those are all the kinds of capabilities that FHIR-based approaches enable and are really a part of the future here, I think, toward what I think of as interactivity of systems, not just interoperability of systems.
Thank you for sharing the evolution of HL7. I think it's brilliant. And Mickey, I'm also part of the HL7 Public Health Committee. And I find it really fascinating, also complex, when we speak about placing social determinants of health in this complex data integration and interoperability or interactivity, as you call it. What are your reflections on that?
We're doing a ton to make available social determinants of health data. So in the U.S. Core Data for Interoperability, which is the data standards that are required to be supported by certified electronic health records. And I think, as I described before, that's, you know, those certified records are used by 97% of hospitals and 90% of ambulatory providers. So the data standard that we require to be supported by those EHRs by, you know, almost de facto becomes the minimum data set of the healthcare delivery system, because everyone is required to have a system that supports those data elements. And so one important benefit that we get from having that kind of a lever is that we can add data elements with a high expectation that data elements that are added to the US CDI will become a part of that minimum data set that's used across the healthcare delivery system. So last year, we added 4 social determinants of health data classes, and we added sexual orientation and gender identity, and we updated the race, ethnicity, language data requirements that we already had in place to include like tribal affiliation, for example, as a new demographic field in that minimum data set. So that's one important thing, I think, that creates that foundation so that we have that information available so that first and foremost, you're able to, within your own system, be able to have access to that information so that you can start to do your own stratifications to try to understand, am I actually, you know, performing equally across all of these different groups? Are there any underserved communities just within my own healthcare environment that I ought to be more attentive to? But then also offers the opportunity to have connections with those organizations that are at the front line of social determinants of health, like social services organizations, for example, that provide legal assistance, housing assistance, food assistance, to be able to have interconnection or interoperability with them, to be able to have that information to get a more complete picture of the patient. And ultimately, the hope would be that I'm able to actually connect patients back with those social service organizations as appropriate, because for some patients, it may be that food assistance is just as important to them, to their overall health, as a cardiology visit. And so being able to, you know, sort of build that in to those systems, I think is critically important. It is complicated because you get into HIPAA issues and privacy issues and the fact that that data isn't structured and all those things. But, you know, the fact that it's complicated means we need to get started now and work our way through those issues. That's the importance of it.
Complications are good way to grow. Mickey, you know what I really enjoy about you is in all the conversations and presentations you give, you always try to bring in this human element. And in your recent HLTH conference, you shared about changing the perspective from interoperability to interactivity. Share with us a little bit more about this.
These aren't technical definitions. They're Mickey Tripathi definitions, but hopefully they make sense to people. You know, where I think of interoperability, it's about, you know, it's kind of pushing data back and forth. So I send you, you know, you request data, or I know that you need to get certain amount of this certain data. And so I push that to you, and then you do whatever you're going to do. And then similarly, you push data back to me, and I do whatever I'm going to do. But our systems aren't built and our workflows aren't built with an expectation that I can depend on getting a response back, or I can depend on getting data from another system in real time to accomplish what I need to accomplish in the workflow that I'm in. And so just to give a real life example of that, I'd alluded to it before, but think about the way Kayak and Expedia work today. I mean, you log into Kayak and you enter information about where you want to go and, you know, and what time of day, and it immediately gives you back information on which airlines, what the prices are, all of that information. And that then allows you to keep interacting with that system to be able to say, oh, I actually want to go in the afternoon. Oh, I really prefer JetBlue because that's where I have most of my points. And you're able to narrow that down, and in real time, what's going on in the background isn't, you know, based on that definition that I gave of interoperability, quote unquote, which is they just downloaded a whole bunch of data last night, and that's what they're, you know, drawing that information on. It's actually live APIs that Kayak has in the background that's, you know, on an ongoing basis in a dynamic way is querying JetBlue and all of the other airline systems to be able to get that information in real time, to be able to respond in millisecond real time, so that the user is able to benefit from the most up-to-date information, and the system, Kayak, is built with an expectation that it will be able to interact dynamically with all the other systems it needs to interact with. And conversely, JetBlue also knows that when a reservation is made through Kayak, it can trust that, and it can, you know, update its system to make sure that it's got that reservation, you know, as a part of its system. So that's the kind of thing that I think we want to be able to get to with healthcare. You think about all the, you know, kinds of use cases one would have. So just think about public health, for example. The way public health, since you're on that public health work group, you know this intimately. The way, you know, electronic case reporting works, for example, is we send this big chunk of data to a public health agency or an intermediary, and they kind of sort through it, and then they decide, you know, oh, okay, this looks like it. You know, we send an EICR, an initial case report, and then they sort of kind of sort through all of that, and then they say, oh, that looks like it's, you know, it's this. Send us a bunch more information, and then we just keep on sending, you know, a ton of information, and then have the public health system try to work their way through it, versus an approach that sort of says, here are three data elements that I'm going to send to you, public health system, that are, you know, could be indicative of some type of, you know, sort of pathogen or some type of, you know, foodborne illness or, you know, whatever it is, and allow the public health system to say, give me two other data elements. Now I know that, you know, and I'm able to continuously sort of update my information without having to send this entire record that presents all sorts of privacy issues. It's inefficient. It creates a lot of burden on the public health agencies who don't have the most up-to-date systems to begin with. All of those issues. And you can, you know, sort of think about a whole bunch of other ways that, you know, we could have that kind of system. You know, patient shows up in the emergency department, you'd be able to, the ability to dynamically interact with the PCP system to just get what they need and to be able to send back information to the PCP system in real time. It just feels like a prior auth. I mean, don't even get us started on prior auth. Right? The ability to be able to just be able to dynamically know right now, is this authorized or not? The patient is sitting right here waiting for that answer, rather than, you know, saying, well, we submitted it to Blue Cross. We'll, you know, we'll find out a week and a half later whether, you know, whether it's authorized.
You're right. With my background in robotics and public health, I think it's really important what you're saying, because interoperability, you know, linguistic wise, not to change it, it's a little more structured and seems like a one-way street. And what you're really asking us to do to create this interconnectedness and engagement style so that we can kind of work efficiently, collectively, and in an agile format, because interoperability sounds to be a little more linear and a little more processed.
It's almost like a series of one-way interactions versus a set of dynamic interdependent interactions.
Absolutely. So, Mickey, what are some learnings from the pandemic where we need to develop a solid public health infrastructure? And what are some nationwide strategies you are working on to modernize and scale from an ONC perspective?
The biggest challenge that that we saw, I mean, in the public health community, and, you know, I think you're a part of the public health community, has known this for, you know, for years and has said it for years. But it wasn't until we had a real crisis that we, you know, actually saw that, oh, yeah, that is a problem, which is to say that our public health system isn't really a system. It is a very fragmented set of jurisdictions, 64 primary jurisdictions, I think, and then a whole bunch of sub-jurisdictions underneath those that are at the state level, at the tribal level, territorial level, and then at the local level, that all have their own, you know, sort of policies related to public health. And that actually is where the authority lies. Most people don't know that the U.S. government, the federal government, actually has very limited authority in public health. All the authority vested by the U.S. Constitution, the 10th Amendment, lies with the states. And so you have all of those jurisdictions that first and foremost have the authority over public health and what defines public health. And then you have the heterogeneity across all of those jurisdictions in terms of what their data requirements are, what their public health programs are, and the technologies that they use, because there is no, you know, sort of authority from the top down that requires that they use any particular set of technology or any specific standards. It's all sort of negotiated by the CDC with each of the jurisdictions. And then the last part of that is that you've got heterogeneity of those systems across the jurisdictions, but you also have real lags in the maturity of those systems. So a lot of jurisdictions, not all, but a lot of jurisdictions, too many jurisdictions, really just have old technology that that they haven't been able to invest in, they haven't been able to upgrade. So it's just not able to keep up with more modern conventions for data interoperability and data management and making data actionable, and certainly not up to snuff when it comes to dealing with huge spikes that occur like in a pandemic, where all of a sudden you've got, you know, a 10,000-fold increase in the demands placed on a system. And a lot of those systems just fell over in the face of that. So what we're doing with the CDC, so we need to, you know, sort of get more systemness out of our public health system. And what we're working on very hard with the CDC is to say, how do we think about more modern cloud types of infrastructure models and business models to help support the stilts, the jurisdictions in supporting their infrastructure, which doesn't have to have the compromise that using older technologies and older architectures, you know, sort of forced, which is the compromise I'm talking about, is that jurisdictions want to maintain control of their data, because that is where the authority lies, right? Every state has the authority, the public health authority. And so they quite naturally want to say that we are the ones who have to control that data. And in a, you know, in an old style world of technical architecture, that meant that you had to control the servers and you had to own the data, literally had to own the servers on which the data resided if you were going to have that kind of control. Now, as we know with modern cloud architectures, you do not have to have that compromise. You can absolutely have all of your data hosted in a modern cloud and have that be a multi-tenant environment where your data and your infrastructure is completely isolated from the next one, but you're able to get the full benefit of a shared infrastructure and the lower cost the higher reliability, the higher security that comes with that, as well as the opportunity for shared tooling and shared applications that gives you incredible scale and greater opportunities for standardization across all of those jurisdictions, and having a shared governance model on top of all of that so that people feel that they have a say in how their data is being used and they have visibility into how their data is being used. So that's what we're working really hard with the CDC on, is to say, and that's a part of what they call the Data Modernization Initiative, which is a, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars project that the CDC is engaged in to upgrade the data, modern, the, you know, all the public health data systems, but do this with this idea of, you know, this, the North Star architecture is what they specifically call it as it relates to creating this architecture that'll support stilts to allow them to manage their data better, manage their infrastructure better in a way that allows them to hopefully get spend less time wrangling data and wrangling, you know, technology systems, and more time on public health, which is what all of them want to do. That's what they want to do, right? They want to do public health. They don't want to deal with data. So we're, what we're doing with, from an ONC perspective, is we're helping the CDC with all the levers that we have. So we're saying, how does the USCDI that we were talking about before get extended to support public health so that we have a common data model based on the data model that all healthcare providers use to lower the burden on those who are reporting that data, because it's the same data model that they're already using, but allows the, you know, public health community to to benefit from that. How do we use FHIR? We have a joint initiative with the CDC called Helios, which is a FHIR accelerator that we've partnered with HL7 on, to say, how do we think about using FHIR in novel ways to support the CDC mission with specific applications that uniquely use the capabilities that FHIR enables? How do we have nationwide network interoperability? And we haven't talked about that on this call, but, you know, TEFCA is the ability to have nationwide network-to-network interoperability. And how can we have public health agencies directly participating in that, so that public health, so that you can have the idea of a true public health network or subnetwork under the umbrella of a nationwide clinical interoperability network. And then finally, how do we do things like use ONC's certification authority, where we certify electronic health records? One of the things that we're working on with the CDC is and with the states, is to say, is there a way that we can use that certification program to certify public health agency systems, to lower the cost of the systems to them, and to allow the opportunity to have greater standardization of those systems through certification, so that we have, you know, better vendor alignment with the actual needs of the public health community.
Absolutely. Love your answer, mostly because it says one common thread, which is, let's all speak the same language. And that brings to my next question, standardizing standardization. Do you believe we speak the same language when it comes to standardization?
Wow, what a great question. A tricky question. I guess the answer to that is probably no. that we probably don't. I mean, we, from an ONC perspective, I mean, we strongly believe in the, in open industry standards to support an open industry architecture for the exchange of information and for the sharing of information. And that idea of an open architecture ecosystem is to say that systems ought to be built to interoperate using open industry standards, that what they do within their own system is totally fine. I mean, we do not, you know, we have nothing against proprietary technology and intellectual property and so open industry standards does not mean open source. I mean, open source is one way of doing it, but the idea is that we all ought to agree on a set of consensus open industry standards to be able to use for interoperability. One of the challenges, I think, in healthcare is that it's so fragmented that market coordination is really hard on its own. In many other industries where you have a little bit of concentration on the supply side or the demand side, the market can self-coordinate in certain ways because you get a group of players together who can agree through legal means. So I'm not talking about, you know, sort of antitrust issues. It's people cooperating under an umbrella of, you know, industry collaboration, but they can get together and agree on a set of standards that can help to drive the industry. In healthcare, the problem is that the industry is so fragmented on the supply side and the demand side that it's really hard for the industry to get together and do that. And so that's where the federal government, it turns out, plays an instrumental role in helping to facilitate that kind of collaboration across the industry, because the federal government is the only player that's big enough across the country and is big enough in every market to be able to be a driver that literally everyone will pay attention to. You know, everyone's going to pay attention to what Medicare and Medicaid and ONC says about, you know, certification of EHR systems, regardless of what market you're in. Whereas, you know, like in Massachusetts, we don't really think a whole lot about United Healthcare because United Healthcare doesn't have a big presence in Massachusetts, it turns out. So, you know, so that's why, you know, the federal government ends up playing a big role in, you know, sort of driving this idea of an open architecture ecosystem based on open industry standards.
Thank you, Mickey, for sharing. This brings us to a last question. If you have to share three takeaways for the future of health, what would that be?
Three takeaways. The first takeaway is, I think, and you may have seen this when I presented at the HLTH conference, is that sort of just the perspective of where are we in the trajectory of health IT. And I would argue that we are now just at the beginning of the opportunity to really think about the digital future and the true digital healthcare, you know, the true digital healthcare system that we want for the 21st century. That, you know, it's a lot of hard work. And certainly when you're in the trenches, it's hard to step back and say, where am I? And it all feels like a mess. And it all feels like, you know, we're just digging and not getting anywhere. But when you step back, you sort of realize that we have now created a digital foundation that we now have the opportunity to really think ahead and ask ourselves, what is it we want to get out of this? And what are the opportunities for us to deliver a tremendous amount of value? I think there's, you know, there's an old adage, someone says that Bill Gates said it, I have no idea where it actually comes from, but an old adage that we always overestimate how much value technology is going to give us in 5 years. And we always dramatically underestimate how much value it actually gives us in 10 years. Now, in the healthcare case, we have to say 10 years and 20 years, right? So it took us 10 years to get, you know, electronic health records in place to the point that we have them today. But I would argue the next 10 years are going to be, you know, sort of that digital transformation of the healthcare delivery system. So I think that's to me, one big takeaway is, you know, sort of recognizing that we now have that opportunity and we need to, you know, sort of be building that future that we want today. The second is that, you know, health equity is a huge and important part of this. So we should be thinking about health equity as a design criterion for everything that we do. In the same way that we think about privacy, same way we think about security, we should be thinking about health equity. It starts with the data. And we're doing our part, hopefully, you know, with the federal government to do, you know, thinking about social determinants of health as a part of the US CDI and core and minimum data sets. But we need to be able to do more to ask ourselves, you know, at every turn, what are the ways in which health equity could get affected by what it is I'm doing here? And how do I design that out of the system? Or at least design a system that's going to mitigate, recognize and mitigate, you know, at every turn so that health IT isn't perpetuating and certainly hopefully not exacerbating, you know, health equity types of issues. And then the third thing is, you know, I guess I would say is, you know, I often get asked, you know, when are we going to be done with the health IT thing? And, you know, and I mean, at one level, we're not going to be done, right? But at another level, I think it's, you know, to me, our job with respect to, you know, health information technology and interoperability will be done when people stop thinking about it. When, you know, in the same way that, you know, you and I just go and buy a phone, right? We don't think about the standards that are underlying it and think too hard about whether it's Android or iOS or, you know, what, you know, which version of Android or iOS I'm on. I mean, certainly there are ringers who think about that. But for the most part, we don't think about that. We just buy a phone and we know that it's just going to work. And when new cool features come, it's like, great, new cool features. Awesome. Let me use those new cool features. And we don't think about it. We live our day-to-day lives with the expectation that technology is just going to work so that we can actually focus on what it is we want to do. That's, I think, when, at least from an interoperability perspective, when we get to that point so that doctors aren't thinking about that and patients aren't thinking about that, they're just able to do what they want to be able to do. That's when it'll be done. And we should all be trying to work toward that future.
Wonderful. Sounds like we need trust. And as you and I know, healthcare moves in the speed of trust. But Mickey, thank you so much for your time, your insights. So grateful to have you join me at Health Forward today.
Thank you. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening. This is Health Forward Podcast, and I'm your host, Smriti Kirbanandi.